Hey Jess, how's it going?
It's going all right. It's been fully fall.
Fully fall in SoCal. What does that even mean? Is it cold? Is it cool?
It is actually cold. Yeah, it's like low 70s, upper 60s.
Yeah.
There's a little chill in the air. And it's been a kind of a cold year in general. So
That's fucking weird.
It is really weird.
They were
right to call it climate change.
I officially don't remember when the last time I was in L.A. Like you know, like when you haven't been to a place in a while and then you've been there many times and then all the trips start to blend into, you know, you don't know which one was which trip.
Let's see. I'm like, I don't remember. That must have been 2018.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, it's been ages since I've been out there.
Cause I came out to see you guys in 2019, like a couple months before everything changed.
Whoa. Was it that?
Yeah. It was November 2019 when we went up to, upstate.
It's shocking, like things that happened in like 2020, 2019. Like people, I was talking to Chris about this and I was like, that was only 2020? Yeah. It's like fucking that feels like it was 2016, you know, like or 2017. Like it felt closer like 8 years ago. It was more like 4 years ago. So, I don't know. I feel like that's good when things you think they happened a lot longer ago than they really did. And then, you know, in my mind, I'm like, oh, my God, that was so long ago. That must have been 2018, 2017. They're like, no, it was 2020. And I'm like, ah, okay. I guess time isn't moving that fast.
So. Oh, that's fair. Yeah. For me, it's a weird feeling to feel both. Like, it's only been 4 years or 5 years since 2019, 2020. But it also does feel like forever ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually feel like time moves slow right now. I don't get that feeling. You know, people are like, oh, yeah, when you get older, like time just gets away from you. I'm like, I don't know. Time's pretty slow for me, like, or normal speed. Like, I definitely don't feel like the days are just like blowing me by, you know. So
I heard this from a parent friend that, you know, especially in the fog of early parenting, the days are long, but the like years are short.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I
guess it's like, just it's a statement of what you're filling your time with.
I mean, my friend, for example, he's his kid just started his eighth grade, I think. You know, I'm not even sure he's in high school yet, or maybe he's getting close. And he's like terrified. He's just like, oh my God, like I'm gonna blink it in a blink of an eye that he's gonna be gone. You know, and I'm like, it's 4 years from now.
Those like, are some big 4 years too. Like he doesn't have to freak out about
high school. Like for me, like high school was a whole universe. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
from the start of high school to the end was like, you know,
it's a whole epoch.
It is. It's a huge amount of things going on in those 4 years.
It's not just a continual. It's not just 4 years. It's a whole like developmental phase and a period of life that gets frozen in amber in a sense after that.
Yeah, it's so a saga, it's, you know, like but from his perspective, he's just like, it's just gonna blow right by, you know. And I'm like,
so he caught empty nest syndrome like 5 years early.
It's a real thing. My sister got it because her oldest is off to college now, and I knew she would be like really sad, you know. And I was like, and she was really sad. She was so sad that she called like the kennel that she had been talking to, and she was like, "Yeah, take the dog."
Oh, okay.
You know, she's like, "I'm gonna take the dog." She called it, you know, from because they like they all flew out to send him off to college, and then she called him from the place and was just like, "I want him ready when I get back," you know. it's so weird. It's like I don't know. My parents totally did not have that problem. Like, you know, they weren't sad to see me go. They were happy. I mean, because I guess I didn't go far for college, so that, you know, one thing is like I pretty much was able to come home like every weekend if I wanted to. But then when I shipped off to New York and, you know, left town and never, I, you know, that was a quarter, like almost a quarter century ago, you know, I never went back, you know, and they didn't give a shit. They were like, yeah, all right, see ya, bye. So yeah, but now these days parents are so terrified of of their kids leaving, you know, terrified of it.
I mean, it's probably not a difference in parents loving their children. So I remember, I don't actually know how my parents felt when I left for college. I think because my brother is 8 years younger, it's like they had a whole nother like parenting journey ahead of them to bring him up.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were sad when I left. I don't think so. I think they were fine. Mm. But I know my aunt just couldn't take it when her youngest went off to college.
Mm.
I think it was a lot like it was more like some kind of recognition of mortality on her end.
Perhaps, yeah.
Like 20, yeah. Like basically 20 years have gone by, and here, like it is the close of a journey where the nest is as empty as it was like 18 years ago.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's digging confront. Pretty deep. I mean, I think that's true. I think that's definitely there. I think I think at an intermediate level, like if you're not digging all the way down to that, there's also, I believe, the fact that like in at least from what I've seen, like I think the nuclear family is like even more central than it was like even more central than it was before. And even, you know, in the 20th century. We recognize that the nuclear family was this like new concept, not the nuclear family, but like the primacy of the nuclear family over all else, yeah. You know, and we recognize that. And I think it's actually gotten more intense where I guess at an intermediate level, I think one of the things that they fear when they lose their kids to, you know, college is that they don't know what they're going to do with themselves. They honestly don't know what to do because like, their own lives were so wrapped up in their kids. And I see this because kids are much less autonomous than they were before. They get babied more, and you know,
it's a huge part of a parent's life to raise the kid now. Like if you have to drive the kid, you know, volunteer with the kid, you know, like if you're a scout or something, you got to like dedicate your own time to it. It's a lot of yourself you're putting in, even though it's nominally for the kid. So once that goes away, that's a big part of your life disappearing too.
I think underlying that is like a loss of trust in institutions and the overall system where like, I think we talked about this before, but I, you know, like in the late 20th century, I'm going to start using these phrases just to like drive home how long ago this was, but like in the late 20th century, you know, I think parents were a lot more comfortable, like just sort of like letting their kid loose into the education system, and because they trusted the schools, you know, like right. They were like, by the time you were 13 or 14, the parents were like, yeah, you, it's between you and the school at this point, you know, like yeah. You navigate for yourself, you figure it out, and we'll help you if you need it. But for the most part, like we trust you to sort of pick your classes, pick your extracurriculars, pick your sports.
And you trust the school
yeah.
to do a good job, to be watching out for them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so I think there was more of a sense of like handing your kid off slowly into the community and then from the community into the world. But now I feel like I see parents are, you know, managing their kid's career like a sports agent would manage an athlete, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it straight through senior year of high school. And the reason for that, I think, must be a loss of trust in the system where they just don't think that it's viable to just sort of let the kid handle it. Like let the kid manage themselves at the age, you know, when they're teenagers. They just don't believe that they can do it, or that's how it should be done. But you know, I don't know.
It's hard to blame them because it is easier than ever to fuck up your life, like irrevocably fuck up your life.
You think so?
I think so.
What do you mean?
Like
by
once,
that?
Just the fact that everything is documented and online. You can do something stupid one night, and if it's caught on TikTok or whatever, it goes around. That's forever.
You think that's what their fear is?
I don't think that's what the fear is. I'm sharing one example of a thing that you can do that screws everything up if mm-hmm. you do it. And that's definitely a thing that we didn't have to deal with when we were coming up, you know, and that's just one thing. And plus, it's just so much harder to get into, to get the credentials you need to get going in life. Any of those steps along the way, you can trip and then it can cause a little cascade effect.
Yeah.
So if you're gunning for the top, there's never been more ways to screw up.
Yeah.
So I understand the urge to overparent on that front.
Yeah, I guess I get it too. I just, you know, I don't know. I just feel.
Oh yeah, like it's a relatively mild example, but like, do you remember like sophomore year in high school? There's that stupid like PSAT thing.
Yeah, for the National Merit Scholarship.
Yeah, National thing. Merit yeah. thing. Yeah. Yeah, I got chewed out because I literally forgot. To submit, like, you have to, like, I think you have to pay. You have to, like, know the deadline to sign up for it, and then you have to pay, you have to fill out a form and send it off. I forgot to do that. So I didn't take the PSAT. So I just missed out on the whole national merit thing completely, and I didn't hear the end of it. I, like the way.
You mean from your parents?
From my parents, from like my friends, or like this was a super critical thing. This would put me on the map. If I'm not on the map for this, then like I basically fucked it up for the rest. Like, so like there I was like for another like 2 years thinking like, okay, well I have nothing to say about national merit. So there goes my chances maybe. Mm-hmm. But it would have been tempting for my mom to have just like kept me hyper organized and, or like did it for me, you know?
Yeah.
It turns out it doesn't matter for shit, basically. It didn't matter, but it's just one little bit of like neuroticism on the path to adulthood. And you know, there are more consequential problems that can stack up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the neuroticism and overthinking is warranted. I just have a problem with the entire thing. My thesis is that there's a slow rolling war against the nerds. I think this is kind of the normification of society. Like you wanted to talk about, you know, why like kids generally just seem kind of bland overall.
It's
kind of textureless.
Talentless.
Yeah,
I've noticed, like, this is purely anecdotal, okay? Because I'm sure there's loads of talented kids, like, ultra-talented kids. And in a weird way, it's, I've noticed, like, there's a lot of really crazy talent out there on, like, among the youth on social media, like, just incredible dancing, singing, acrobatic shit, you know, park, you know, whatever the fuck the kids are doing. Weird athletic shit, you know. It's all over social media, but that's social media. Anecdotally, like the kids that I know, that I've, you know, my friends' kids, you know, I have to say, like, quite boring and talentless. I know that sounds so mean, you know, and I'm not saying that to insult them. I am saying that I feel like I don't want to make a generational comparison because that might not, I just don't have enough to say about it, but like I always thought that expected kids would just like have their own, you know, especially by the time they're teenagers, like that they would have these weird obsessions with music or art or a sport or something that they would get really nerdy and geeky and obsessive about, to the point where you would almost have to put the brakes on for them as the parent to be like, hey, you know, you can't just do that. Like you can't just draw and paint. You can't just play your instrument. You can't just play the sport all the time. Like you've got to do other shit. You got to study, you know, whatever. And, there's not that, like, I don't know any kid like that basically. They're all, but it's weird because they're all so
out of existence.
Well, you think so? You think it's generational?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, I don't think it's that we suddenly stop producing exceptional people, mm-hmm. right? It's that there's a huge system that kind of breeds this out of people.
Mm-hmm.
I think we saw this when we were coming up. Like the process to get into a good school is actively antagonistic to fostering like true creative genius. And this was true in my day.
I think that's totally true. I totally agree with you.
More so now. Because there's no room for it. Like as a monomaniacal genius in some arcane thing to just go deep. Because chances are that means that they're shit at everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But they're counting on a world that values, that can see that talent, recognizes it, and can promote and foster that. And that there's going to be a living for this person at the end of that in adulthood. That's not going to be the case. It's far more... you're going to get far better social reward to be kind of blandly generalist and roughly good at everything. Like you're good. You've got a good GPA, which means that you're kind of good at all the subjects. It doesn't mean you're talented. It just means that you were able to grind and get good grades on like most of your classes across all the subject matters that you're taught. You're supposed to be kind of generally good at sports, good at a musical instrument. That's the quote, well-rounded. Well-rounded means you're kind of good at everything, but you can't afford to be exceptional at any one specific thing.
Yeah, Santa Monica Mike put it this way. He was like, he feels like the professional white-collar class basically took the tools of their own trade and just went fucking crazy with it when it came to their own kids and started... getting them an Outlook calendar, you know, and putting Zoom meetings on it and shit and divvying up their time in half hour chunks and, you know, scheduling everything. And there's just, I think that's correct.
Yeah, you're managing because that's like, a skill set that they had to cultivate to get to where they were. It's a pretty comfortable, very privileged position in society, especially now that we don't make shit anymore. So if you want a good outcome for your kids, that's going to be what you teach them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's been true for a long time, but I imagine it's more intense now.
I think so. I mean, it was, for sure. I mean, I don't know the timeline of it, but I definitely feel like it's gotten worse. Where, you know, just like at work, where like people feel self-conscious if they don't have like a loaded calendar. And mm-hmm. are, you know, have all these fucking meeting invites. And so they can complain all the time about, I got another meeting I got to run to. I got another meeting I got to run to. And they
pointless bullshit. That's basically putting on a front to other people trying to do exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
this is how the nerds lost Silicon Valley.
Yeah, it's communicable because it's like. It's this weird thing where people complain about it, but then if they didn't have like,
it's a badge of honor.
Exactly.
If they didn't have to complain about it.
It is kind of a weird
it,
humble brag to be like, oh my God, I got so many fucking meetings. I've been locked in these endless, pointless meetings since like the morning. I can't find a break. Like that is a sign of like, yeah, you know,
I am important to the organization. I'm visible.
I'm headed somewhere.
I'm grooming my brand. Yeah, but this is how actually talented people get burned out and or shoved out of companies.
Yeah,
because like if you take like a programmer, right, who's really good at what he does, but given the nature of the work, you just cannot punctuate that day with like 15-minute meetings all throughout. You just can't. You're going to ruin your entire day.
At the outset, didn't Google kind of like recognize this? And they were like, what was it like every week the employees could dedicate like 1 or 2 days to like personal projects?
I don't remember about Google. I know like Atlassian did, and they did like Jira, Confluence, stuff like that. They would like every Friday was like a personal.
Yeah. I mean, I remember like, Google
play day
was,
or something.
I remember it was a fairly famous, you know, thing at Google.
Oh, yeah, no meeting Fridays. Yeah.
Okay. And you didn't have to work on your official project. Like, you were supposed to, like, be able to dedicate it to some other project that you were just interested in, you know, whatever that might be.
Something like that, yeah.
But they recognize that, you know, you need to give people, you know, a degree of, like, free time.
I heard it backfired because as things do at scale, inevitably, that just means that the prior 4 days of the week look even worse.
Look even worse, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that it alleviated one day and then kept everyone else's, kept the other 4 days the same. It just crammed everything into those 4 days.
Yeah.
Or you get pressured to like not partake and actually get some, or you use that 1 day to catch up on all the shit that you couldn't do because your time was broken up with too many of these pointless touchstones throughout the week.
Yeah.
So like looking important, looking like you're doing work, and that always means impressing someone else, right? Mm-hmm. Took far more precedence over the quality of your actual output. And for a lot of these people, the output is impressing other people.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you even measure that?
Yeah.
So, and this is the skill set that is being forced onto the next generation. Like, where in that matrix is there room to eat? Like, being an actual genius is probably one of the worst liabilities in that case. It would be worse than just being an idiot.
Yeah.
To actually be someone who has a passion, a burning desire to be dedicating their time and energies to cultivating this one particular thing, that's actually worse for the current job market and where we're at societally than just being kind of a moron who can just kind of glad hand and smile and go through the motions and, you know, stack a good looking Google Calendar.
Do you think there's any empirical support for this idea that kids are less talented these days? I don't know. I don't know if anyone cares to measure such a thing or whether such a question is too offensive. But like,
I think we're kind of seeing it. Like, as soon as we pivoted to a skills based economy, right? Oh, okay. Here's kind of a really rough one. Remember the video that went around during COVID times of the Chinese children being able to bounce a ball in a circle in unison?
Yeah. And
the collective like horror that evoked.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, that little saying, you know, that little like joke saying that started going around Twitter. It's like, well, no matter what you do, there's going to be an Asian child that does it better.
Yes.
Right. So jokes aside, I think it is kind of recognizing what we are collectively losing right now as a group. Without implicating any single person, we are devaluing actual skill in anything. Right. And this is kind of the rough transition out of an actual productive economy. What does it matter that you're a genius with a Turing Pi, like a Raspberry Pi board? What's it actually fucking matter? That's not even the job that makes enough money to land you a mortgage these days.
Yeah, and I guess.
It's thought leadership on LinkedIn that could pay off better than that, if we're actually talking about dollars and cents. And I think the actual skill is collectively devalued. I mean, people call people nerds as a derogatory term. That's how it was when I was growing up.
There is this theory, I don't know how true it is, but like there's this theory that like kids are having more like immune issues because they're too clean. The idea being like if your kid is exposed more to like the outdoors and, you know, a little dirt and grime and, you know, like their immune systems are able to get the sort of like exposure it needs to kind of like mature and become robust. You know, I wonder if like something similar is happening where parents are so goddamn intent on nurturing and fostering learning and development that it's actually kind of crushing it because like,
yeah, you're breeding curiosity out for one thing. You're cultivating a compliant person who knows how to literally follow the Google Calendar and check off all the boxes in a day.
Right. And so you start having the sort of like, I always thought of it like that as kids, like as kids, like a lot of stuff we did like sort of covertly, like we did it behind the backs. Like, I don't know how you were like, but I always felt like there were things that I just wanted to do on my own. It wasn't an act of rebellion. It wasn't whatever. It was just this weird thing that, like, I wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, like, you know, I spent most of a summer just painting. I painted this huge painting that's still on my hanging on the walls in my parents' house. And I just spent, I don't know, for whatever reason, like the second my parents went to work, I would get up, set up the easel, start painting. I did the same fucking thing every day. I listened to this radio show where like they were giving away $10,000 a week. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll try to call in. Every day I would try to call in and win the $10,000. And then I would paint the whole day. And it was just this like, no one told me to do it. It was just this weird obsession that got in my head. And I was like, I'm going to do this painting. And then I think about that. And it was like a sort of covert act. And a lot of things were like that. A lot of things that people did, my friends did, were these secret covert acts, not of rebellion, but just sort of like, just the thrill of being on your own and doing it, you know, just doing exactly the thing you want to do. And it felt so good. And, I've never let go of that feeling, you know, like to this day, I benchmark. Not just that, but I mean, there were a lot of other things that, you know, I did and my friends did. But like to this day, I still benchmark happiness against those experiences of like, you know, sort of covert acts of, you know, just total self, like, what's the word? Like just total spontaneity. And
I believe you. I understand perfectly.
Yeah, and it, you know, like sometimes when I'm not feeling particularly great, like I try to resurrect that. Like I try to be like, okay, if I felt that way again, like what would I feel that way about? Maybe that's
yeah. Where would it manifest?
How? Right yeah. Now. Where would it manifest? Like what if I have a free day? Like I could do anything I want. Like what would it be? You know, what would I spend the day obsessing over and you know doing and you know, do kids do that anymore? Like, I feel like they need the time to develop that. You know what I mean? Like,
you need the time and
the fucking time. They don't have the time. And I swear to fucking God, I think the parents are destroying that opportunity because they're smothering their fucking kids. I'm getting angry. They're smothering their I'm talking to people now. They're smothering their kids with this pretense that they're doing it for the kids when in fact they're doing it for themselves. They're living life vicariously. They're trying to relive their youth through their kids and they're eating, they're cannibalizing the experience that I feel like young kids should have when they're, you know, when they're like teenagers, you know, like when they're getting into that phase in life, which is these covert acts of autonomy. And that's everything, in my opinion, as at that age. That's everything. But they take it. Everything's scheduled. You know, the kids' time is completely fucking monopolized by the parents. You know, to the parents listening to this, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to other. I'm subtweeting people I know in real life. Not same.
I mean, maybe a controversial take, but I feel like kind of PMC parenting culture in this case is actually catching up to Asian parenting a generation prior.
Wait, you mean Asian this parenting is an actual was that bad?
I think so. I mean, I'm not generalizing, but
I disagree there, but then we may have different experiences.
So I can't generalize. Just in my community, right, which was like upper middle class to upper class, like Southern California in the late 90s, early 2000s, this was kind of a real problem. Everybody was overbooked. You know, you did like soccer or tennis, and everybody was in like one of like five tracks. Everybody was overbooked. And I remember like the summer, my most like I remember hating the summer while it was going on, and then now looking back, it felt like a paradise because this was the summer right before senior year, and I had no friends to play with because everybody was in those stupid SAT tutoring camps.
Yeah,
and this was like 8 hours a freaking day for like, I don't know, like 15 weeks or something. Like basically the entire duration of summer break, all of my friends were in SAT camp. So I had nobody to hang out with.
That's so fucking lame. Are you serious?
Yeah. I knew people who had been in SAT camp since like fourth grade.
Ew.
We're talking like every Friday or Saturday or whatever.
You know what? I've met enough people that grew up in that milieu in California. I think I do know what you're talking about. I did not experience that myself, but I have met enough people from California, Asian people who grew up at that time that have told me about the horrors. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like you're playing violin, or you're in the orchestra, or you're playing piano, you're playing tennis, one of these like things that'll look good on your college application. So I'm not saying that I'm not validating the stereotype of the Asian parent, but I am saying I recognized several grains of truth in that shit. Mm-hmm. Specific to my experience growing up and the people around me. Sure. That was so my version of painting in your case, my equivalent to that was, that's a summer I got super into fermentation for no reason at all.
Exactly.
Except I was just bored. I followed my mom to work. She works at a university. I went to the library, and then like the first, it was like a beautiful book on like the process of fermentation, like yeasts and bacteria.
That's what I'm talking about. Exactly. Yeah.
So I cleared off a shelf in my dad's tool shed out back and set up a bunch of jars, and then just like stared at yeast literally for 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's what I'm talking about. Like, there were so many weird things as a kid that I remember, you know, the other thing that I think is kind of at fault is the internet, but I don't want to get too much into that. Cause I think everyone understands that, but like, I remember, you know, for whatever reason, you know, my dad had a saltwater aquarium book, like, you know, guide to saltwater fish. Uh-huh. And I got so fucking obsessed as a kid. And I would just memorize, you know, the names of all these. I still remember some of them, like the rainbow wrasse and, you know, the
Is that the one that's kind of iridescent?
Huh?
Is that the one that's kind of iridescent?
Yeah, it's like purple and yellow.
Yeah.
And then there's like, you know, there were these trigger fish, the clown tree. Yeah, I remembered all of that shit. The yellow tangs, you know. And I never got myself into the tank. But then later, I think I dated a girl in college who, for whatever reason, was like, you know, I really want to set up a saltwater tank.
And yeah, I was born for this moment.
I was like, let's fucking go. And so I finally got my saltwater, because, you know, it was all on her. It was hers, right? So I was just helping her do it. But point being, like, that's just one of many examples of these weird fucking things that I would get really obsessed with just because that book was sitting on my parents' shelf. You know, or I would get super obsessed with classical music because my dad had all these German classical, these Deutsche Grammophon CDs on his shelf that he never listened to. I don't know why. He had just had I think his brother gave it to him. His brother had like all these fucking CDs for some reason, just like mailed a box of them to us. And I just listened to every single one of them. And, you know, weird shit, Liszt, Sibelius, shit like this. And I would just listen to it, and I just became obsessed. And then I joined, you know, the school. That's the other thing. Like, kids will pick up an instrument. They never get good at it. They never fucking get good at it. You know what I mean? Like, and then they're like, he wasn't really into it. Wasn't into it. You know, it's just like this. I don't know, man. I just feel like there's just a lot of like,
okay, on that one, the Asians have it. Okay, just because your kid gets bored with it because it's hard. No, that's not the kid expressing himself. That's just being lazy. You got to do your part as a parent. You got to step the fuck up. If you want your kid to get good, he's got to put in the work. Sure.
But I think that the kid also has to get really interested in it. You know, like, it's got to somehow grip the kid. And I do believe that no amount of, like, parental encouragement is going to get a kid to get into it. Like, you've got to sort of bait your kid, or just let the kid bait him or herself. Like, you know, but these are very vague ideas in my head, so I'm rambling, but it really, like, my experience growing up really much, very much was obsessive. Like, I would be obsessive about things. I would be obsessed.
Just like kids
do. Yeah.
And we've bred that completely out of them.
You know, except for, like, I don't know, like fucking games like Fortnite, I guess they get obsessed about, but, you know.
This is the only dopamine we let them have. It's really sad. They're not allowed outside. It sucks that, like, my city that I grew up in has a curfew.
Yeah.
So kids literally cannot be outside. It's like you get supervised visitation with the outdoors.
Yeah.
There's no possibility for, like, spontaneity or serendipitous exploration here.
Yeah, yeah.
The irony is that everyone's trying to cultivate some form of genius in their kid, or, like, something exceptional.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Something that goes against the grain. Yet every instinct that they might have to go against the grain is beaten out of them. And you keep telling them over and over again that this instinct is going to get them in the poorhouse later on. Colleges aren't going to like this. This is the stupid thing to do. The correct thing to do is just buckle down and go to your tennis lessons and play the clarinet like I told you to.
Yeah.
Because we're training the future leaders of America, the real iconoclasts.
Yeah.
The leaders that are going to see the horizon ahead and take us there and not take the easy way out.
Yeah, I feel like there's just too much intentionality here. You know what I mean? Like, I do feel that. And the other thing that kind of annoys me is how people become, like, parenting experts and stuff, and they read all these studies and shit. And I'm like, why do you need to read that? You were a kid. Right? Like, we all have subjective experience of growing up and being a kid. I mean, we should rely on that. You know, but everyone has become a subject matter expert by reading up on this or that, I guess. I don't know. There's just a lot of anxiety and, like, perfectionism going into this. And
there's
a lot
of room for failure. There is. So as much as I criticize that, I get it, because it's the stakes are high.
Well, were they really low for us? You know, I don't think they were. I mean,
I think they're each turn of the wheel, it gets a little bit harder each time. So it's a matter of degree. But, like, my mom was telling me that, you know, it wasn't actually that stressful for her and my dad to get through school because, like, for one thing, like, cost of living, it just wasn't that hard to make ends meet. So it was very much like a matter of passion and drive for them. Not like, I literally have to do this because I don't know how I'm going to ever be able to afford a house and a family if I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So the stakes are high. And like everyone talks about the death of the creative class, right? Like we don't see a lot of bands forming spontaneously. We don't see a lot of, like, creative writing or art or anything really, there's no, like, nexus for that. Yeah. Where can you be a broke artist and meet other broke artists now that aren't, like, trust fund babies? You can't.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, the stakes are getting higher and higher. So this polished, like, McKinsey perfected, unit of white collar labor is in a material sense the ultimate like prized good here. So there's a reason parents should be gunning for that. It just in the process you're stomping out your children's personalities, any budding chance of a authentic personality in your own children, and really drilling into them. You know, it's like everything about this process is like breeding a panopticon into children. You're training them to evaluate themselves and their actions entirely on the reaction it's going to get from the people around them. This was a huge thing for me and my peers in high school. Everything we did was judged against how is an admissions committee going to look at this.
Jeez, yeah.
And it took a lot of rebellion to break away from that. Like, I put my foot down. I wasn't going to SAT camp. I just wasn't. So I made the deal with my parents that I would take the SAT. I think this was like freshman or sophomore year. If I got a good enough score, I wouldn't have to go. And then I don't know how, I got it. So I didn't have to go to SAT camp. But, like, there was no freaking way I was going to that. There was no freaking way. I can't imagine anything worse. And it's not like it actually even did anything. I don't think any of my friends that went through that camp saw a material difference in their score. I think it improved it by like 100 points at best. And we're talking like 8 hours a day, losing 3 months of your life in one of the four precious years of high school to that shit.
Yeah.
For what? We all got to the roughly, like a roughly similar place in life, like 20 years out. There was no reason for that. You just bred anxiety, personality disorders, neuroticism, a lot of bad self-esteem. It was just bad. Yeah, there was no human reason to do this.
Yeah, because you know what? I do believe that more important than fundamentally speaking, like, more than, oh, let me put it this way. Okay, so I had this conversation with a coworker of mine, and she's got some like work performance issues, I'd say, right? And it's not because she's not smart, and she went to top tier schools, right? I'm not going to say which ones because I don't want to, whatever, but top tier, right?
We know what that means. Yeah. Yeah.
And she grew up in California. And we had this talk because she was really frustrated at work and whatever. And she started saying that her experience has really been, you know, it's all about who you know. And it's not what you know, it's who you know. And we Asians are not good at that. And, you know, all this stuff. And she, frankly, I think she has a bit of a racial persecution complex. But from my perspective, I think she's way overloading that. Because I think it really has to do with a kind of like social ineptness and anxiety, which I do think makes it hard for her to communicate authoritatively and clearly, you know, and also to manage her workplace relationships properly. And I'm not going to get into too much detail on the pod, but like I did say to her, you know, I was like, you know, look, I do agree that there is some amount of that in life, you know, but like I've always felt, you know, if you're really good at what you do, and you're also good at making sure that people recognize that and come to rely on you to the degree that you're comfortable with, right? Like you make them rely on you to the degree that you want them to rely on you, but you have to be good. Like that is good enough. It is good enough, you know? And I think that there's a thing with like Asian immigrant families where I feel like we overcorrect for this who you know, not what you know thing in a way where, because we're not good at it, we seem to sometimes to take too much stock into how, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. We want to like be better. We want so badly to be better at that, that we completely fuck it up.
Yeah. And I totally know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Like I'm getting into territory where I'm not really good at trying to explain what I'm saying. I think you just kind of have to know what I'm talking about. But like, there is a degree to which like, you see now, I know people who, you know, they're raising kids now, and they grew up as, you know, children of like first generation immigrants, and they're so certain, you know, no matter what I say, I'm like, yeah, but you know, they're like, but Harvard's where you go to meet people. Like that's how you succeed. You've got to go to Harvard. You've got to meet the next generation of people who are going to become the next Mark Zuckerberg or the next famous fucking Hollywood this or that, and that's how you get ahead. You've got to be there, and if you're not there, you're never going to make it. And I'm like, I feel like that's just wish casting in a way. Like that's not, you don't know that, you just think that, you know what I mean? Like you don't actually know that that's the case. And even if you went to Harvard or whatever the fuck, like I don't think it would really help you, because not with that mentality, you know what I mean? I don't know, like it's just, there's just this really like, I'm frankly, this sort of pathetic middle class striverism to that thinking. And I think it's just, it's kind of doomed. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I mean, insofar as the white collar class is the one currently on the chopping block right now, it's doomed. So when it's, and when that ride stops, that means that you've raised up a bunch of people who don't know what to do except manipulate other people. That's a pretty scary place to be dead in the water in.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's just, you know, like I said, I was talking to Mike and Steve about this. Like, You know, I think one of the worst thing that parents can do is raise their kids with the, and I see parents do this a lot, and they raise their kids under what I believe is the mistaken, because kids don't understand finances, they don't understand class, they don't understand wealth. I think a lot of kids think that their parents are richer than they are, and the parents have done that on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a vanity to the way they raise their kids, and they want to be a hero to their kids. They want, you know, they want to be like, they want their kids to look up to them and stuff. And
yeah,
but I think in a way that's such a trap, because it's like, wait. You're raising your kids like, you know, like they're a little prince or princess, right? But are you a king? Like, are you a king and queen? Like, do you really have? I mean, like, taking your kids always to skiing, these fancy ski vacations and going on fancy trips and, you know, whatever. Like, just getting them used to sort of like a, you know, sort of like a wealthier, the trappings of a wealthier lifestyle, but yet you expect your kids to take out loans to pay for grad school.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not rich. Why are you creating an illusion among your kids that you guys are rich? Because you're not. You know, like, that's not good. That's the worst situation of all, is for a kid to be raised with the belief that they're wealthy when they're not. Because then they're not going to develop that grit, and yet they don't have the actual wealth that mm-hmm. would serve, you know, to insulate them. So they're just going to be left to the world without that toughness because they got spoiled. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm worried about that. Let's put it that way.
Me too. And these are the questions that I couldn't answer to my satisfaction. And this is part of the reason why I don't have children. Like, I know that I can't provide the same childhood to my kids that I got.
Why not?
For one thing. Huh?
Because it's too expensive now, or?
It's just gone.
Oh, okay. You mean, it's not just the privilege, but it's just sort of like the way things were, like
the way things were. Yeah. Okay. Like it's a very strange thing where I see, like, especially the battle over screens. It seems like there's both an additional edge of antagonism in the parent-child relationship, and also like overbearingness is kind of baked into the model now. Because it's very much a choice now. If you don't want to, like, surveil your kids or over-schedule them or something, that's, like, now a choice you have to defend, not, like, part of the normal way things were. That there were some, that was some time that children could have to themselves to do their thing. And, it, like, it is true that it's a lot more difficult for them to do that thing, too. I loved, like, my dad was a total computer guy, still is, by the way. So we had, like, every iteration of the Apple. So I would just sit there and, like, unsupervised and just do whatever I could on those things.
Mm-hmm.
I can't leave a kid alone with a computer now. Especially if it's connected to the internet. No.
Yeah.
Like, if I lived in the city I myself grew up in, I can't let my kids out to do the same things I got to do as a kid. And I have no way, I don't know how to explain that. And the city has the audacity to be like, why did this population shrink by 40% and, you know, get older by like 30 years in the last like 15 years or so?
Mm-hmm.
Their giant solution was to do boba trucks in the parks. Millennials love boba. We'll just put some boba stands in the freaking parks. That'll bring the young families back.
Yeah.
But it's a bunch of boomers sitting around scratching their heads wondering why the average age of the Arcadia resident like got older by like 27 years and the population shrank. Yeah, because all the kids grew up, moved, didn't come back out, but the parents stayed.
Mm.
That's why.
Hmm.
So I can't
where'd they
I can't
go?
Offer that. The kids?
Yeah.
Anywhere else. A lot of people move close by. Like, I'm still within, like, 20 minutes. But, like, nobody can afford to buy in Arcadia right now, except unless you have a giant suitcase full of cash.
Yeah.
So this is like several of the like elementary schools are going to be consolidating, maybe closing because there just aren't enough kids to support it.
Wow.
Stuff like that. Yeah, the way I grew up, I don't know if I could do that. Like, is it also being like a bad parent if I'm not, you know, to some extent making them do what everyone else is doing, because that does carry a material payoff at the end. I don't have the means to ensure that they'll never have to work again. I can't guarantee their material security. They're going to have to fight it out there. So am I doing them a disservice if I don't do all the shit
But aren't you sort of having the exact sort of like anxieties that we're sort of critiquing the professional, the
yeah, it's the just middle fucked.
Class where like they're like everything that they're worried about is the future. They're always talking about the future employability, like the employment prospects for their kids. Like,
yeah, how, you I know and it's it like, is.
Are you raising a worker or a human being? You know what I mean?
Everything's financialized and everything's expensive. So to some extent, you're kind of doing them a service if you don't give them the skills to be able to.
When was it the parents' responsibility to give the kids employable skills? You know, that's the kids' responsibility to develop.
It stopped being employers, right? A big crisis now is that nobody wants to hire junior level employees at all, entry level.
But why are we even? I mean, when it comes not me and you, but like, why are we as a society or as why are parents talking about this? Like, why does this matter? Because I feel like it's so much more important, at least from where I am. Like, the most important things I learned as a kid was, it was really about developing my own autonomy and personality and sense of self. You know, and
those
like,
those aren't the big things.
Being able to navigate the workplace, like, it's so much more about day-to-day, like, the hard skills and stuff. Like, honestly, not that hard. Not that hard to develop. You know,
well,
you want to be like a securities
kid,
lawyer. I could train up a kid to do securities law. I'm pretty sure I could do it. Okay, it's not that hard. Okay,
it's kind of anti-human. The modern workforce is so anti-human, I think, that it actually does take significant runway to beat the humanity out of a budding person to be able to fit in. It's easy for us because we've been doing it for decades.
But you know, I don't agree. I've changed my view a little bit about this, which is that I don't think workplaces beat the humanity out of you. I think that workplaces are full of people who are quite out of touch with their humanity. I agree. But I do feel that the workplace itself is not super constructed in the sense that it's still just a bunch of people, right? Like, it's not, I don't think it's quite the sort of panopticon that we all make it out to be. I mean, yeah, there's like 360 reviews and there's, you know, fucking they're watching you. Yeah, there is that. But I think that there also is a large amount of it, which is just like, it's just a bunch of people trying to figure things out. And I do think that it is the more autonomous people, the people who do bring a level of humanity. And I don't mean humanity like empathy and love. And no, I don't. I'm talking about being a genuine person and not just like, you know, an uptight suit, but like someone that has personality and autonomy and knows how to talk to people in a genuine way, you know, not stiff. And I guess what I mean is just not stiff. You know what I mean? Those people do really well at work. I think they do really well at work, and they
need the right personality.
You know,
they need the right personality to make, because this is the mythical unicorn, iconoclast, innovator, disruptor, the tech archetype. Right? There's still a right and a wrong way to do that. The actual technical genius who's actually disrupting everything gets no eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
He's just seen as the autistic weirdo. He gets fired a lot. The Adam Newmans and the Sam Altmans, the guys who can steal that valor, those are the ones that get ahead. So if you're a parent optimizing for, if you know this.
But why are people optimizing their kids to be Sam Altman? You know, like what is that? Why is everyone doing that?
Like, I wouldn't. And there's and you are correct, because in a sea of like people who were kind of bred the same way, there is like, I mean, if you zag when everyone zigs, yeah, you stand the chance to win the whole pot. Yeah. It's just a matter of your own risk tolerance.
But who gives a shit? I mean, are we talking about a startup or a human? You know what I mean? Like,
it's your genetic investment in the future, so kind of both.
Oh, that is so disturbing.
It is, but here we are. Here we are. So I'm saying I have a ton of empathy. Whatever disagreement I have with it is really like this shit is coming down. This cannot go on. I don't blame any.
It's so depressing.
It is. It's dystopian. It's horrifying.
Ugh.
But it's like I have some sympathy, because I feel like in this one sense, having grown up the way I did, it's like PMC parents of today are kind of catching up to how I grew up. And yeah, it was awful. And there was a serious human toll. Kids fucking killed themselves over college admissions outcomes. Because they literally thought that if they did not get into this the school that they've been getting primed for since basically birth, that their lives were over.
Well, it's kind of like child abuse in a weird way.
It is. It's absolutely child abuse. Yeah, and I'm
sorry, but like it's really much more important to raise your kid to be like, like there's no word, you know, people say happy and there's no word. It's just like to let your kid develop, you know, the way that in the direction and speed that they're kind of wired to develop, mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people think that they're doing that, but in fact they're stuffing their kid into a narrative that may not be true. And I think you don't know, like as parents, like we don't know, like my parents had no idea what was going on in my head, and there's no way that they could know, and there's no reason that they should have known. Like that was me becoming a human being. I was coming online as a human being, and I was going to have to figure it out my way. And I needed a level of autonomy to just do things the way I wanted to do them, you know, and be interested in the things that I wanted to be interested in. And they didn't pick that for me. I mean, a lot of the stuff was just, it was random, because I saw it one day, or a friend was doing it, or who knows, or I saw my parents doing it, or I saw there happened to be a book on my dad's shelf. He had no idea I was reading his fish book or his, his drawing book or his history book. He has no idea what I'm doing, you know?
Being bored over summer or winter break has done more for my development as a person than any like class or focused.
My mom, you know, I used to, just like your mom. Endeavor. Your mom would take you to work and you at the university, I guess, and you go to the library. When I was a kid, my mom worked in Washington D.C. I like on the summer they didn't send me to camp. Like literally, I would spend certain summers like I would just go with my mom in the morning in her carpool. Mm-hmm. I'd drive down to Washington, D.C. with them, like as if I was going to work. And I would just spend the whole day going to the Smithsonian, whichever one I wanted for as long as I wanted.
Nice.
You know, wow. I'd spend most of my time at like the National Art Gallery, and I'd just sit there and I'd just draw the sculptures or, you know, copy the paintings.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's the real luxury as a kid, this endless expanse of time. Exactly. Free from all the petty shit. You don't have to worry about canceling your 7-day free trial, or you get billed $20. Yes, that's personal. Yes, Adobe has $20 of mine that I didn't want them to have.
Yeah. It's not just a $20 that it went to fucking Adobe, but yeah.
Yeah, said it went to Adobe. I just needed to pull one thing off this one .ai file in Illustrator. And then, so I signed the fuck up, and then I forgot. I even had a memo on my goddamn phone, and I was like, okay, I got the alert. And I'm like, okay, I'll do that after I finish this one thing. And then, boom, 1999.
You should have called me. I have a friend at Adobe. I can get you.
Goddamn.
I got a friend at Adobe now. Yeah.
But see, it's those little things.
Chance cousin works there.
Oh, we're connected. Yeah. This is the real human capital, people.
Yep.
But no, like, as a kid, it's just like, you're at the Smithsonian with your little pad and your pencil or charcoal or whatever, and it's like an endless horizon in front of you. There's literally nothing you have to think about but that. You don't even have like TikTok in your pocket. You don't have to, you're not worried about like making content for your followers. You're not even talking to your friends. You're just there mm-hmm. in the moment. That's the real luxury of childhood. And that's what we're taking. I think the funniest thing was an acquaintance of mine. I didn't know her enough to say anything about it, but she was so proud that she had signed her kids up for innovation camp.
Oh god.
It's like an after school program to teach them how to be like disruptive thinkers.
Kids know that. Oh, at least they should have known. We should have known.
And like
that this is lady, bullshit.
You, got,
like,
on, you just got grifted out of how many thousands of dollars that shit cost you.
Yeah.
That's all that happened. And you're burning your kids' time in between like soccer practice and whatever bullshit you crammed in.
Yeah.
Before their like organic vegan dinner or whatever.
Like yeah.
We're teaching them to be iconoclastic rule breakers. Okay. In between 2 and 4 PM on Wednesdays and Fridays. Okay. I'm sure that's going to work out just fine. That's not going to breed a deep personality conflict in your kids. It's going to manifest as an anxiety disorder in their late 20s.
Two more things I noticed about kids these days. Again, anecdotal, right? I could be totally wrong about the general trend, but it's like, one, I feel like I noticed their general lack of talent, right? Like weird talent, you know. I don't mean they're dumb, untalented, just you know, not coordinated kids. I'm just saying that they don't seem to get deep into something, you know. Like they're sort of mm-hmm. like jack of all trades type because they're trying to pad a resume. Okay, number two is they're not really that interested in developing like a personal taste. Like I remember when we were kids, like everyone started to develop into. Like became really nerdy about music, like what music they listened to became like really important, you know, like and we get really nerdy and not nerdy but like really into it, and they would become very aesthetically inclined as to like what was good music, what were good movies and stuff like that, right? I just don't see that as much these days. I don't know if it's because music has changed or whatever, or
I think we're like, just seeing this knock on effect of like the creative class slowly getting corporatized and choked out.
Could be.
The biggest genre of music, the biggest growth category in music as a genre is Spotify background music and stuff that plays well as like a TikTok overlay.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest. That's an actual like budding genre of music now.
Mm-hmm.
Background music.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah. Okay. So there's that, and then the other thing I don't see is like I don't see kids like I don't see like high school guys having girlfriends and you know or whatever. Maybe I'm not time? Party to this, but like. I don't really see them really developing like, you know, romantic relationships or anything.
I have no insight into that. We do have general trends.
Okay.
Age at losing virginity is going up. Also, young men falling out of society mm-hmm. is happening earlier and earlier and sharper and sharper.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real problem.
Yeah, you know, and just an overall sort of like lack of cojones, you know, like just I don't know, like when I was in high school, man, we were fucking sneaking out, we're going downtown to go to concerts and going to parties at places we didn't know, and you know,
doing
shit that we weren't supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
and. Really excited about pushing the boundaries and really just luxuriating in the newfound autonomy. Like it was exciting to be in high school because you started really to feel like you were becoming sort of like I felt like we're turning into like dudes. Like we got, you know, like we can make moves now. We can drive. I got like adult clothes now. Like, you know, like I can dress like I'm cool, you know. You know, we could do shit. You know, we could go out with girls, you know, like, I don't know. It was just like this time where it was just, and now I don't know. I feel like that's not the same anymore. And I frankly feel like parents have smothered that out of their kids. That's what I feel.
Yeah, probably. Going back to my, this is another like weird point of synergy. Yeah. When I was growing up, nobody dated. You weren't supposed to. You got in deep trouble if you did.
Fuck, man. You guys. You guys were in the future. Like I still was living it within the boom of that, like within the echo of like that sort of like completely 70s laissez-faire attitude that people had towards their kids because the parents were busy fucking doing whatever weird shit they were doing in the 70s, and they were like, "Hey, you know, we're busy having our fun. I don't know. The kids go fuck the kids."
Yeah, I remember seeing this like this comic that's kind of done up in the style of like a Life magazine comic from like the 60s or something. It's like a 60s housewife mom in her apron and pearls smoking a cigarette in the living room.
Yeah,
dad's exactly. Drinking, and the kid's like, "I'm taking off now," and they're like, "Yeah, whatever." Yeah, you kind of grew up in the tail end of that. So, oh, you remember like Amy Chua, Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mom, and she caught so much shit for that.
Yeah.
And it's like as much shit as she caught, like that's kind of the general direction the PMC parenting class took anyway.
Yeah.
Just organically, that's just what happened. So in a sense, like yeah, the way I
think the thing that they were mainly disagreeing with her about is whether, you know, you need to be so mean about it or whether you want to take this like really nurturing approach. But in a weird way, I feel like the nurturing approach is even worse because it's
smothering. I think it's even more smothering.
Yeah, because like the Tiger Mom approach, like if you're just a bitch, like eventually that kid is going to just be like, you know what, Mom, fuck you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it creates an antagonism. And at that moment, like you fully break off from your parents. The smothering thing is like the psychic.
There's no exit. There's no fucking exit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, should we continue this on like the bonus side of this?
Is this listenable? Like, is this?
Yeah, I think so. I think
it's interesting.
Sure, we can. Is this listenable? I hope so.
I don't know.
It's not worse than any other of the other shit that we put out there.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll continue this discussion about smothering and nurturing versus nurturing and. Or versus being a tiger mom and all this shit, but I think it's a really interesting subject. So, yeah, if you want to support the Patreon, go to patreon.com/planamag, and we have a load of like bonus episodes and access to a Discord, and you can send us your thoughts directly on the Discord. It's pretty lively. I'm on there all the time with you all, chopping it up on the Discord. So come and join.
Yeah.
patreon.com/planamag. All right. We'll see you on the bonus feed. Bye.